I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
This is Reception Perception, the show. Now, James Coe and Matt Harmon.
Can we talk about another struggling quarterback here in Tua Tagovailoa? I went on this program last week, and people said, and I was actually caping up a little bit for Tua. A little bit, you know, it's a little bit out of character for me because, you know, I kind of fight the tide of people saying Tua for MVP or whatever. Last week against San Francisco, people said Tua got exposed. I disagreed with that take. But I come back this week and I legitimately ask you, Matt Harmon, did Tua get exposed against the Chargers this week? A team that is down Joey Bosa, a team that was down Derwin James, a team that was down Bryce Callahan. Tua played absolutely horrific football. Did he get exposed?
I mean, at one point he was 3 for 17. It was about as ghastly as you could get him. Before they hit that big one to Tyreek Hill, man, their biggest play was the fumble recovery for a touchdown from Tyreek Hill, which, by the way,
right,
have you seen the clip that like Teron Armstead like shoveled that out to Tyreek Hill from the
from the bottom of the pile?
Yeah, he actually popped it up to Tyreek Hill.
Amazing.
I mean, that's
dude.
Shout out Teron Armstead for that one. But did Tua get exposed? I don't know if exposed is the right word, but I do think that I said this on my Yahoo podcast this morning. Like, I think what happened the first 12 weeks of the season, I don't care about that anymore. Like, I don't care now. I don't care about that incredible. And I love what the Dolphins did the first 12 weeks of the season, right? Where, I mean, the amount of space that Jaylen Waddle and Tyreek Hill created, the way Tua was dealing over the middle of the field with those guys. I mean, and teams were, this is the key piece. Teams were playing zone coverage at a league high rate against Tua. Nobody saw a higher percentage of zone coverage on their dropbacks than Tua among quarterbacks this year, and he was absolutely crushing it. Why would you not? Like, because teams are terrified to play big boy man coverage against Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle, because we know those two boys can not just get open and shred man coverage, but like rip your pants off and you know, embarrass you
in man
coverage, because like they'll rip you up. It's just, it is what it is. However, last 2 weeks, the 49ers went and played physical press man coverage on the receivers, on the outside, in the slot against these guys. And look, you're going to get embarrassed when you do that. Look, it's the reality. You and Tyreek Hill in back-to-back weeks has destroyed cornerbacks in like man press coverage situations, but it's one play. It's like one play per game. And if you can live with getting, you know, laughed out of the film room on during the week, when you go back and watch the tape, that's fine. Because, and it's not as if Tyreek Hill can't beat press man coverage. It's not as if Jaylen Waddle can't beat press man coverage, but what do we talk about? The timing and the amount of like seconds that Tua is getting the ball. He wants to get the ball out fast. 2.4 seconds, 2.42. Like, he wants to get the ball out quick. And this, that little disruption from the press coverage there can throw off the timing of the quarterback. And if you also combine that physical man coverage on the outside with, you know, like a robber safety coming down when you show two high looks, and then you bring him actually into the middle of the field there, you have a guy maybe drop back in that middle, you disrupt that middle where Tua wants to throw the ball, it throws you've just thrown the timing of the playoffs. So I do think, I don't know about exposed, but I think they need to come up with a counterpunch to this brand of attack right now, because team. Now it's on, you know, now it's on film, right? And the Chargers, it's one thing for the 49ers to do that, okay? Because the 49ers have a great defense, right, James? But you just listed all the dudes off that were missing for the Chargers, like, and they haven't been a good defense all year, even when their guys were healthy. So now it's on film, and now you're going to have to find a way to combat that if you're Miami and if you're Tua.
I mean, again, no Derwin James, no Joey Bosa, no Bryce Callahan, three of their top players on the defensive side of the football. By the way, all of those guys who are pass disruptors, you know. I mean, Derwin James and Joey Bosa do it all, but I mean, come on. 10 of 28, 35% completion rate for Tua against the Chargers in primetime, 148 yards passing. Almost all of it came on that one play and the one touchdown to Tyreek Hill. Then you go back. And you kind of look at, I mean, when you have two of these kind of games, like Tua has had, where two, you're just like, whoa, this is bad, bad foot. Not just below average, but like, holy hell, you look like one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL. Bad.
Yeah.
When you have not just one of those games, but you've got two of those games now in back-to-back weeks. You brought it up yourself. Whatever he did in the previous 12 weeks, you kind of sort of disregard that. Well, I'll tell you what the number one thing I do, and this is what everyone does. You kind of look back at like, okay, well, where was he successful? And you look at the 5 weeks leading up into this like two-week dumpster fire. Pittsburgh, Detroit, Chicago, Cleveland, Houston. All wins, all good games by Tua, but all of those teams are sub-500 teams, all trying to find themselves, especially on the defensive side of the football. You could say Detroit's been surging. That's fine. But at that point in the season, Detroit was in the weeds, man. Their defense is still not very good. Let's be real
here.
Pass
defense for sure, yeah.
Exactly, right? So those five games in 5 weeks in a row, that's where Tua was kind of building that, like, dark horse MVP, you know, candidacy, right? Where you're just like, oh, he's putting up some stats. He's putting up some numbers. Miami's winning some games out here, man. Okay, now that being said, he did have a high quality win week one against the Patriots, who I think also were in the midst of trying to find themselves. They're still trying to do that, obviously, with the quarterback position in their passing game. And they just beat the brakes off of Baltimore. But Baltimore in week two, their secondary was all kinds of damaged, and I think defensively they were damaged goods there in week number two. I think they're way better here at this point in the season than they were in the early part of the season. So, man, I don't know, man. You go back and you kind of sort of look at where Tua did well. It was against some bad teams, man. And then he finally goes up against, you know, two teams that – and again, you brought up the Chargers not good defensively, dude. Come on now. Chargers not good defensively. Where did this game come from? It's absolutely, I don't know. It's kind of sort of mind-boggling. I love that you brought up the man coverage, because for me, I think my biggest criticism of Tua is that if he doesn't see it, he's not going to throw it. And he's done a lot better with that this year, Matt. But I think overall, I think, you know, when push comes to shove, you still do what you got to do. And I think he's the kind of quarterback that if he doesn't trust it, he's not going to throw it.
Yep. I think that's 100% true. He's come a long way from the player that he was early in his career.
For sure.
You know, however, like if Tua ends up leveling off as like a Jared Goff type or a Jimmy G type, I wouldn't be surprised by that. Right. Because, you know, me and Jared Goff, like, that sounds so disrespectful, but I think guys like, I mean, Jared Goff, I think, gets a bad rap, right? As like a guy who stinks when he's just like a perfectly league average, like, starting quarterback. And I think
totally,
if Tua levels off being a perfectly league average starting quarterback, it's just, to me, the thing with like the criticism of Justin Herbert this year, like, if you ask any serious person, like anybody who really sits down and like watches film or is like making decisions for an NFL team, would you take Herbert based on what he's shown so far in the NFL, or would you take Tua? I don't think any serious person says I'd take Tua, right? Like, I think you'd take Herbert. Right. And the overall criticism of Herbert this year has just been wild, because just look at what the two guys we just talked about are dealing with, you know. Tua, I mean, you just live in, and it's not as if he's not executing the plays, and it's not as if he's not even adding value to the plays, but you live in life on Easy Street, brother, when you've got Mike McDaniel dialing up some really great stuff, and you've got Jalen Waddle and freaking Tyreek Hill as your two receivers. Meanwhile, Herbert is playing without Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. And, like, by the way, those two guys, they're both outclassed by at this point in their careers by the two guys we just talked about in Miami. But the drop off from
by,
them to
by
everybody
a
else,
wide margin
by a
too.
Lot. Oh, yeah. By a lot, right? Like Tyreek Hill better than Keenan Allen, Jaylen Waddle definitely better than Mike Williams. Okay, so that just even those guys aren't even like guys we considered for the superstar episode, right? Like, but the drop off from them to the guys that were playing, you know, without like that we're playing in their stead is crazy. And James, how many teams in the NFL can just like survive losing their top two receivers? Like imagine what would happen to Joe Burrow if Jamar Chase and T. Higgins both missed time at the same time. Imagine what that offense would look like. I think Burrow would still be very, very good, just like I think Justin Herbert has been very, very good this year, but the production would look like shit. Okay. The production wouldn't be as good. That's just how it works.
The only person that can and has survived that, Patrick Mahomes. I mean, it's unbelievable what he's doing. Those things that you bring up, and it's like you bring that to Patrick Mahomes, and it's like, okay, yeah, cool. Well, we're just going to keep doing what we do. Like,
I agree. But Mahomes is like incredible. But Mahomes is different, okay? Like,
dude,
that's
he's different.
That's why when you're sitting there ranking NFL quarterbacks, it's Mahomes, and then what? Like, what do I do next, okay? Like, then the conversation starts. It's like tier one, Patrick Mahomes, tier two, now what, okay?
Right. Yeah.
But so it's just like, and even, Mahomes still has Kelsey, of course, and that matters
right.
a lot.
But what
he's done with the other goofball receivers this year that they've got there is something to behold. So, yeah, man, has Tua gotten exposed? I don't know if exposed is the right word, but I do think that I love when teams face these type of dilemmas because Sean McVay has faced it over the years with Jared Goff. You know, I think we just talked about Joe Burrow, the Bengals have faced that this year. How do we adjust? Teams have taken away our first punch. Do we have the talent? And do we have the coaching to sit there and find a counterpunch? I love when teams are, how about the Eagles, right? Like they tried something last year early on and it was not working. And then they changed their offense and they were great at the end of last year. And then this year, they've been great this year because they have good players and they have good coaching. I think the Dolphins have good coaching and I think they have good players, so they can figure it out, but they have to figure it out. And I love when teams are faced with these dilemmas.
I just want to shout out myself because I tell you what, in week 6 through 8, when your boy over here is criticizing Zach Wilson and Tua Tagovailoa and just getting absolutely smoked online, I'm holding firm. I'm like, nah, I know what I'm seeing with my eyeballs. I've seen enough football in my life to tell you Zach Wilson ain't it. I've seen enough football in my life to tell you Tua's about a league average quarterback, man. But no. People were trying to get all up in my mentions, all hot and huffy, telling me I'm wrong, that I don't know football, that I don't know what I'm talking about. Now, here we are going to week 15. Where are y'all at? Where are y'all at? That's all I wanted to know. Where are y'all at?
I mean, I think you'll still get some Tua folks out there that come with you and give you some heat. You know, it's only one game,
for
it's
sure,
only two games.
For sure.
I don't think you'll be getting any mail from the Zach Wilson fan club. All three members, wherever they are, they're probably in a bunker somewhere.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
There you go. Hey, you mentioned Jared Goff there with Detroit. Detroit's been playing out of their minds offensively, which is a big time surprise. But you brought up a very interesting point here. Maybe it's because that their wide receiver core a little bit underrated right now by NFL folks.
Well, yeah, you know, I just talked about Jared Goff a little bit. And like I said, I don't Jared Goff is like, it's so weird that there's been this crazy discourse about Jared Goff of late. Now, you know, I talked a little bit about that with Amon-Ra St. Brown. I get it because the production has been incredible. You know, Field Yates pointed this out that Jared Goff over his last five games, 69% completion rate, 1,311 passing yards, 8 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, 75 total QBR. The Lions are 4-1 in those 5 games, a top 5 offense in both yards and points per game this season. And by the way, like, the only loss in that 5-game stretch was to the Bills, and the Bill, they took the Bills to the end, right? They've been great. So absolutely, I get it. That's crazy. But yeah, we know that Jared Goff can produce in a good ecosystem. And that's the what I want to highlight here is that, you know, the Lions ownership, like, kind of read the riot act or had to give Dan Campbell the dreaded vote of confidence this year, right? Because right, they were losing games like crazy to, yeah, to begin. Yeah. But like, once their ecosystem has come together, mm-hmm, I think Ben Johnson is a hell of a play caller. Like, by the way, Lions fans, start to wrap your mind around, start to get mentally prepared to lose your offensive coordinator this year and have another discussion about what do they do, because somebody's hiring Ben Johnson as a head coach. By the way, Ben, what a name, Ben Johnson. He could be like anybody, you know, a local member of a member of your local government, you know, a damn, I don't know, like city council member, assistant general manager at your local Food Lion, you know, a deacon at your church. I mean, he's an everyman, right? Ben Johnson, the name Ben Johnson, give me a break.
By the way, he looks like an everyman too. I was just gonna
say he looks like another guy. Okay. Somebody that you would like. Yeah, he does. I mean, shoot, he does look like a deacon in a church. I stand on, he looks like,
you know, isn't this what Lindsay Theory said about the Colts OC, that he just looks like every guy who hosts a fantasy football podcast?
Yeah, he doesn't have enough of a beard, this Ben Johnson guy, but okay. Yeah, I mean, for sure. Yeah, he's a little too thin to be a fantasy football podcast host, but he doesn't look enough like me. Anyway, but he does look like an assistant general manager at your local Food Lion, for sure, Ben Johnson. So, but again, get ready for that face to not be up at the front of the Food Lion assisting during rush hour when there's bagging needs. Get ready for him to be up in front of a podium as a head coach, because he's been calling a great set of game plans. And man, this Lions wide receiver core, I do think, is really underrated. We know, I think Amon-Ra St. Brown is knocking on the door to be in the superstar club. I think that DJ Chark, you know, he's healthy, which is great to see, because I don't know that he's been healthy for much of the last year and a half, right? He was terrible his last year in Jacksonville, but he was really good in 2019, and he's always been like a vertical stretch deep receiver. He's doing that stuff for the Lions, man. Now they got Jamison Williams out there.
Yeah.
Like, that's good stuff, brother. I mean, that's good, man. This Lions offense, and by the way, their offensive line, not only is Penei Sewell a kick-ass pass catcher, I guess, but he's a great right tackle. Their whole offensive line is awesome. And they got two backs. I mean, they even use Justin Jackson, but like, they've got two backs, Jamal Williams and DeAndre Swift, who are great. Like, what's the weakness in the Lions offense right now? I don't think you could find one. And Jared Goff is perfectly good enough to elevate all of these guys and keep the ship afloat.
I think what Jared Goff has been able to do in his career that is really, really good. He's a great distributor of the football, right? Like, he doesn't lock in on guys. And you know, again, I think he's good with play concepts and a pretty smart football player too. He lacks a lot of physical tools that I think, you know, prevent him from being a great quarterback. But again, yeah, I think the slander's just gone too far, right? Like, he's a perfectly average NFL quarterback. Somebody who, again, you kind of look at the draft price and you say, okay, one overall, okay, that probably doesn't fit. But overall, he's just been, again, an average or even a slightly above average quarterback, to be honest with you. I will point out one thing, though. A lot of these games have come at home for Jared Goff. And for whatever reason, man, like, dude, he is just so much better at home in the friendly confines. And that goes throughout his career as well. I know that's true of a lot of quarterbacks, but it is especially true of Jared Goff as well. On the road, and especially in bad weather environments. That's why this trade to Detroit for Goff made a lot of sense to me anyways.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Detroit had that in their kind of like, you know, calculus or whatever.
I mean, shoot, he was just kind of like a salary dump for the Rams. Right. It's like, yeah, we'll give us two first round picks and yeah, sure, Jared Goff. But I mean, God, it's,
that deal's starting to look really good too. Jeez.
I think that's like a, it's always tough to say, like, I don't think you could sit there and say the Rams lost the trade because they won
didn't.
Super Bowl.
And if it's a win-win.
Yeah, right. It's a win-win. That's what I was going to say. I think like you're it's starting to look like a win-win for both sides, which it probably always was because you got two first round picks out of it. But like,
yeah,
I mean, you got a starting caliber quarterback, right? Like if they want to eventually try to do what the Rams did and upgrade on Jared Goff, or what the 49ers did and, you know, try to upgrade on Jimmy Garoppolo by bringing in Trey Lance, like try to get the theoretical upside guy, I think that's fine. But at the meantime, you have like a starting caliber quarterback, and shoot, there's a lot of teams out there that would love a starting caliber quarterback for an ecosystem that's well set up. I think Jared Goff is fine.
I am going to go ahead and give you a sneak peek, but in week 15, I am going to go ahead and you could sit down Jared Goff. He's going on the road and he's taking on Sauce Gardner and the Jets. No,
that's
nope.
going to be tough.
Yeah, nope.
That's going to be tough.
It's going to come all crashing down and people are going to be all hot and bothered. Because the dude's been on absolute fire right now. He's got two touchdowns, and three touchdowns in back-to-back games, man. Like, nah, I'm telling you, I'm going to tell you right now, week 15, sit down old Jared Goff, and you know me, I love Jared Goff. On the road against the Jets, I want no piece of that business, dude.
Right. I mean, that's still the thing with Jared Goff. Can he go into a hostile environment? Can he play against a high quality defense? Can you win because of Jared Goff in a hostile environment like that, especially as you're trying to win big games eventually down the line in the Super Bowl playoff push, stuff like that? I mean, so far the answer has been no when he's done it with the Rams. I think it will probably still be no with the Lions, but for now,
right,
he's fine.
Yes,
he's fine.
Yeah, he's fine. He's good. All right, so there you go. I agree with you. I think the Lions wide receiver core as a group is probably pretty underrated, especially I love that you brought up the health aspect of it, because once these guys started getting healthy, they've always been missing that vertical threat, right? And not only are they getting that from DJ Chark, now they're getting a vertical threat from Jameson Williams as well. Ooh, boy, I tell you, that's an interesting wide receiver group they got there.
And Josh Reynolds is not like he was their like number one outside receiver for times last year when they picked him up mid-season after the Titans cut him last year.
Right.
And like now he's their four, and which is like, oh, Josh Reynolds, a perfectly fine, capable NFL receiver, when he's your fourth guy. Now he's their fourth guy. That's team building. That's team improvement right there.
Yeah. I mean, I think doesn't he profile perfectly? Like, again, if we're bringing these LA comparisons, right? Like he's like a poor man's Robert Woods, right?
Well, like, he's like a poor man's Josh Reynolds. He played with the Rams.
That's right. Good point. Good point. But no, I mean, he's a receiver that I think can play, you know, flanker a little bit. And, you know, if you need him to get some tough catches inside, I think he can do that too. I just don't think he's not a guy, as you mentioned, you don't want to be relying on this dude as an outside vertical threat. That's not his game, man. Maybe he'll sneak one by the goalkeeper every now and again, but overall, I don't think that's a very strong skill set. For old Josh Reynolds out there. But no, so yeah, with Jameson Williams and DJ Chark playing outside, man, I think he can slide into a little bit more of a natural role. But you look at that group overall, I think that is actually a pretty good group, especially headlined by a guy that's knocking on superstardom right there in Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Yeah, it all comes together through him. But it's a fun offense, and I mean, shoot, I would love to see the Lions in the playoffs right now. I know we'll talk about the playoffs on our next episode, but there's a lot of teams in the NFC. I would rather not see them, and I'd rather see the Detroit Lions in the postseason.
Man, I'll just bring up this last thing, and like I'm gonna galaxy brain this thing. But how about if Detroit shockingly moves on from their head and installs Ben Johnson as their new head coach?
I think that's too much, because I think Dan Campbell's actually been really good. People think of Dan Campbell as like just some meathead, but I actually think he's been a really good head coach. And like, he's the one, by the way, who switched from like fired Anthony Lynn midway through last year and installed Ben Johnson as the play caller, like kind of in a collaborative effort there for a little bit and then fully pushed it to Ben Johnson. So I think that would be a bit of a stretch, but
it would, because he's won the locker room.
Yeah. They love
guys are
stuff,
playing hard for him.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Anyways, but that's just me galaxy braining something out there. But you're right. Ben Johnson's probably leaving, or Detroit can pony up the cash, man, and pay this guy's serious OC money, which they might do that too, man. So anyways, great show today, obviously. But man, when we come back, maybe we'll talk a little Jerry Jeudy. We'll certainly talk a little bit of the playoff picture laying out in front of us here as we go into week number 15. I really liked us talking about deep sleepers as well. I thought we'd really help some folks out there win some fantasy matchups, baby, going into the fantasy playoffs. But those are topics that we will talk about in our next show that you will find in the next couple of days. But for this show and for Matt Harmon, I am James Coe. We'll see you.